climb in and hold on tight, KID crew. It's time for the Joel and Thomas Show, powered by Teton Toyota on KID News Radio 92.1 and 106.3, online at KIDNewsRadio.com.
All right, KID crew, it is a Wisdom Wednesday right here on the Joel and Thomas Show. And right off the bat, I want to throw out a little wisdom that we use around my house a lot. That's because when my daughter was growing up, she loved Lilo and Stitch. And so we often say, Ohana means family, and family means nobody gets left behind or forgotten. And that's a bit of wisdom that's really near and dear to my heart. And over the years, as I have interviewed kids in the foster care system and families and those who work in that system, I've been inspired, and it's an issue that continues to be really important to me. And I think that one of the biggest takeaways that I ever received was many years ago, interviewing a 17-year-old boy who was in the foster care system, wanting so desperately to be adopted. And some of the people on the panel said, "Why do you want to be adopted? Because you're almost 18. And his answer was so profound. It happened before the mic drop moment thing was really even big, but he said, because you never really outgrow the need for a family. And I think that's so true. So I'm excited to welcome in the studio today, Alex Adams. He is the director of the Idaho Health and Welfare Department. Alex, thanks so much for being in here.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You oversee a massive department. There are so many aspects to it. But in chatting with you, this is an area, foster care, that you're really dialed in on.
Absolutely. You know, you said it. It's a big agency. I mean, it's a 3,000-person agency. We've got 40 offices across the state. We operate hospitals. We operate an intermediate care facility. We oversee Medicaid and food stamps. And anytime you're at a large agency like that, the more you as a leadership team try to focus on, the less you'll accomplish. But then the reverse is also true. The more you dial in, the more you put a disproportionate amount of energy and focus on a topic, the more you can accomplish. So when I took over the helm in June, I said, where do I want to make a difference? And improving child welfare outcomes, specifically the foster care system, is what I wanted to lean into and say, that's where I want to put my disproportionate time and energy and make a difference.
I love that, because we often talk about the fact that we're in the business of family values, but sometimes the words and the actions don't always line up. So I'm really excited that you're looking at that issue, because I have to believe from where I'm sitting that if you can make a difference in the lives of these at-risk youth, that's going to positively impact our community.
Without a doubt. I don't think there's an area that the department touches where you can make a larger return on investment than investing in these children. You can change the entire trajectory of their lives, help them get a good job, help them get a good education, help them have their own family, keep them out of trouble, keep them out of the correctional system. So I think there's a high ROI if we can do this correctly.
And Alex, one of the things that a lot of people don't, I think, really focus on is the fact that a lot of these kids that age out of the system do end up in the criminal justice system.
That's exactly right. And, you know, just in round numbers, we have about 3,000 youth that are served in the foster care system in any given year. And about 50 of them age out of the system. And what we mean by age out of the system, they turn 18, they're no longer committed to the custody of the department. They walk out of foster care and into the world. And I would challenge any of your listeners to say, did they walk out of their house at 18? Did they have family supports throughout college or their first job? And oftentimes the worst lot in life is the individuals who age out of the system, and there's more we can do and must do for those youth.
Yeah, and when you think about it in that way, it really does put some perspective to it, because, yeah, none of us turned 18 and just were thrown to the wind. I think we recognize that there was some level of support there, and often, I don't know about you, but I often hear people, you know, have that misconception in their mind that kids who are 17, turning 18, really no longer need any help because they're adults.
Well, I think the quote you shared at the beginning is profound, and it's probably one I'm going to use moving forward because, you know, these individuals need a supportive, loving, nurturing home, just like any of us did. And that doesn't end at the age of 18. Having a place to come back to for Christmas, having a place to come back to for Easter, having a social support structure when you have your own kids is absolutely critical. So that's why the department has thrown its entire energy behind this issue, and I'm proud to say we're already making a difference.
You are making a difference in terms of kind of dealing with that deficit that has been there as far as having enough families for kids. Let's talk a little bit more about what those numbers look like.
Yeah, when I started, so I started in June, we had 74 families, foster families, for every 100 foster kids coming into the system. So we had fewer families than kids. We want to be a state where we have more families than kids. I want families waiting on kids, not kids waiting on families. So we've put quite a bit of energy and attention on trying to get that number of foster families up. We've done things to recruit new foster families, but as importantly, we've done things to retain existing foster families. I'll talk about both of those. For recruiting new foster families, we did quite a bit to reduce our regulatory burdens heading into the system. We used to have all this red tape around. You needed a 4-foot fence around every body of water. Well, any of your listeners in rural Idaho have probably never seen a 4-foot fence along the entire length of irrigation canals. Why would we be artificially erecting barriers to entry for otherwise suitable, loving, nurturing homes? We got rid of all of that. We've done quite a bit to recruit new families. In August, Governor Little announced, if you're a state employee, we'll do 8 weeks of paid family leave if you foster a kid. So if a kid is, if you sign up as a foster family and a foster kid is placed with you, 8 weeks of paid leave so that you can bond with the child, connect with them, and do all of the things that a loving, nurturing family could do. And we've had private employers raise their hand and say, we want to join that call. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Idaho is now offering paid family leave for fosters. St. Luke's is offering paid family leave for fosters. Western States Equipment is now doing paid family leave for fosters. We have businesses all across the state saying, we want to be part of this. We want to help. And that's helping get the word out and helping people get over the barrier of signing up. But retention is just as important. We're doing many things to support our existing foster families. We're working to improve our communications with them. In January, we're going to be standing up a call line so they can have someone 24/7, a warm line to get a hold of so that they feel supportive. But we're also doing just some of those things like offering free park passes to foster families and things like that to give them opportunities. We did an event at Boise State on the blue turf last week where about 60 student athletes helped these kids learn the value of teamwork and sport. So recruitment and retention. And today, we're now up to 91 families per 100 foster kids. So we've come a long way, but I would be lying if I didn't say we have a long way to go.
So from 74 up to 91 in a pretty short period of time.
Yeah, 4.5 months. So, I mean, we're pleased with how the community has responded, but again, we've got a long way to go.
And we will talk about more of those efforts and share some of the heartwarming stories. And of course, KID crew, you better believe we're going to shatter some of the stereotypes. We'll keep Alex Adams, director of the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, in the studio and continue with more conversation straight ahead on the JoLynn Thomas Show.
Climb in and hold on tight, KID crew, because we are driving the conversation. It's time for the JoLynn Thomas Show, powered by Teton Toyota on KID News Radio 92.1 and 106.3.
All right, KID crew, on this Wisdom Wednesday, we are continuing our conversation with Alex Adams, director of the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, and we're talking about the fact that they are focusing their energy on the foster care system and really flipping the script for kids who are in that system. Alex, thanks for sticking around.
Thank you.
So you have 1,400 kids that are in need of homes, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So that's a pretty big task. And as you're looking at getting more of the families, what are some of the things, if people are listening and they're thinking, maybe I could do this, what do they need to know about that process?
Yeah, well, so we talked about streamlining the process. So applications are now much more streamlined. I mean, there's a criminal background check. There's a physical facility check of the house to make sure it's a suitable environment for kids. Looking for things like, does it have a clean bedroom? Are there carbon monoxide detectors in the house and things that would support a safe and loving environment for the child? But it's a quick and a free process. And anyone listening that's interested in it can go to the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare's website or call 211 for more information. Again, call 211 for more information, and that number will get you connected to the licensing application information. One thing that people often ask about is, can the experience be customized? And the answer is yes. You can sign up if you're interested in infants, if you're interested in sibling groups, if you're interested in teens. You can kind of curate what you as a foster parent are willing to do. How many kids and what age groups or what genders are you looking for? So and then the foster family has full control over the placement. Oftentimes the department will call and say, hey, I know you were interested in an infant. I've got a two-year-old that's coming into care. Are we able to drop them off? And the foster family has the ability to say yes or no. So the foster parent is in full control of their experience. I'd be remiss to say, not to say that our highest needs are those willing to take teenagers and those willing to take sibling groups, because those are often the most difficult children to place.
And I would imagine that you want to try to keep those sibling groups together as much as possible, because these kids are dealing with enough trauma. They don't need to be ripped apart from their sibling group as well.
That's exactly right. I mean, every study shows the more you can keep a family together, the better off.
The other thing I want to kind of point to, Alex, and you and I were chatting a little bit about this. So, KID crew, if you're listening and this is resonating with you, but you're not in a position right now to foster, there are other ways to support the efforts and to absolutely make a difference. So let's talk about the respite.
You're exactly right. I mean, there's a whole continuum of ways in which individuals can engage. I mean, we recognize fostering is not for everybody, and not everybody is in a position to do it, nor is everybody feeling like they're in a position to do so. But there's other ways to help. Respite care is one of the biggest needs. Respite care is generally up to 72 hours, and it's providing care for children so that the foster parents can have a break. Foster parents, just like everybody else, needs a date night, sometimes needs a weekend away. Mm-hmm. And respite can be a critical way that people can help for up to 72 hours. But we realize some people aren't even in a position to do that. But there's always needs for clothing. There's always needs for food and things like that. And there's a whole host of nonprofits throughout the state. There's one here in Blackfoot, the Foster Parent Association, that runs a closet for folks, and I'm sure they would always be looking for volunteers or for donations potentially.
So a lot of different ways to get involved and make a difference. There are a lot of stereotypes, and often we hear the really exhausting and frightening stories, but there are a lot of positive stories. Can you share a story with us that maybe stands out to you?
Well, you know, what I would say is I've met a lot of these children through events, some of the events we've hosted and some of the events nonprofits have hosted. And these are children like anyone else, like any of our children or those that your children hung out with. They all deserve a chance. I mean, we literally have everybody from doctors that I've met today who used to be foster youth, college professors who used to be foster youth in Idaho. We even have an NFL player who used to be a foster youth in Idaho. These folks deserve an opportunity, and we want to provide them the support and resources.
And you mentioned that this is a way that you really can change the direction of a child's life. I mean, and when you think about it, that's a pretty big ROI.
Absolutely. And, you know, just one thing I would be remiss if I didn't say as well. You know, we talked about getting the rate of foster families up. I'm at 91 families per 100 kids. So obviously we've been focused on recruiting and retaining new foster families. The other way to get that number up is to get the number of foster kids going down, providing effective prevention, prevention, prevention. And the further upstream we focus on prevention, if you look at the top two reasons why people come into the foster care system is substance use disorders of the parents or mental health issues of the parents. And the more community supports we can provide there, the fewer kids likely to come into the system. So certainly many opportunities to engage through nonprofits that provide support for behavioral health issues.
You know, and as you're saying that, Alex, I'm thinking kids don't come with an instruction manual, and we really do learn what we live. So we look to the way our parents parented and take a lot away from that. And oftentimes this is a generational cycle. You have parents who didn't see a good example of parenting, and now they're struggling. And like you said, when you bring in the mental health issues, the substance abuse, so there are a lot of things there that could really turn the tide as well.
Well, that's the stability that foster care brings to these children. I mean, we don't want a child to enter foster care, but when they do, we want it to be a suitable placement with a loving, stable, nurturing environment, because they are modeling those behaviors that the kid might not have seen. And it can change the entire trajectory of their lives.
And I can't help but think how traumatic for these kids. And there was probably some trauma in the situation that they were living in. Otherwise, they wouldn't be entering the system. But to be taken out of a situation that's familiar to you, going into the unknown, it breaks my heart to think about the fear that these kids must face.
And one of the things, you know, studies show that there is trauma associated with removal from a home. So we want it to be the tool of last resort. I talked about prevention, prevention, prevention. You're going to see us go to the legislature with a budget request to put more resources into prevention to prevent that trauma of kids coming into the system in the first place. But there will be a subset where there was abuse, where it's necessary for them to come into the system to ensure that they're safe. One of the things that, statistically speaking, if a family member steps up, a grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, cousin, they can be foster families too. It's called kinship care, and that preserves the stability of the family, maintains some of those cultural traditions, and generally improves the outcome. So there's a huge need for kinship care in the state.
So interesting, and I applaud the work that you're doing. We're almost out of time. Any final thought you would like to leave with people?
You know, just the reminder of the continuum of fostering to respite to donations, and call 211 if you're interested in more information.
All right, and we will continue. We're going to team up, Alex, and share some of these really positive stories, KID crew, because that's how we can all be part of making a difference. Thanks so much, Alex Adams, Director of the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare.
Thank you.